Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Talaine Medaner, and I'll be your host of today's Life Coaching Call-In Hour. We're going to be talking about this month's theme, which is taking care of your best asset. And we've just had a few minutes here before the call started with folks sharing what they've accomplished in terms of increasing their own self-care this past month and the course of doing this work, focusing on that. And we've had everything from people getting their hair done, their nails, massages, going for walks on the beach or in the park to nurture themselves. And I really like the idea of matching up your personal and emotional needs with specific self-care tasks, and that one of the folks did that. And it's a really great way to look at getting your needs met yourself. So, for example, for the need for peace or for balance, going for a walk on the beach or for a walk in the park, that might fulfill your need for peace, writing in a journal, meditating 10 minutes, that would all might work. And starting to take these are ways that you can add your self-care in to actually be meeting your own personal and emotional needs as well. Absolutely brilliant. Need to be nurtured? Going, getting that hair done, nails done. So looking at that. Now, the challenge in that for this particular individual and for all of you is to then raise the bar to the next level of not just getting your emotional needs met yourself, which is the first step and sometimes the easier way to get started. That's great, and yes, do that, because that's a great way of getting our needs met. But then to take it up a notch and actually ask friends and family to do something that you would consider nurturing, so something they could do to nurture you. Now, a lot of people are very big at giving, and we feel very comfortable looking after other people's needs, but when it comes to receiving, that therein lies the challenge for a lot of people, that we're great at giving, but when we start to ask for something from somebody else, that's when we usually get a little bit shy or awkward about that. So getting into the custom and the habit of asking friends and family as well to do things to nurture you. So you might want to think about what would be the next level for you in taking this up a notch. What could other people do specifically that would meet some of your needs, especially that need to be nurtured? All right, so really good work. We've had people looking at upgrading their wardrobe, their clothes. Another person's taking a 10-week class that will improve their business acumen. Again, investing in yourself, taking classes, all that stuff. Buying potted plants, doing the feng shui. So really, really good work and great examples from everybody. So congratulations, all of you, for taking up that extra notch in your own self-care. And I just encourage you to keep at it. This is how, it's one of those things, is it the chicken or the egg that came first? When you look at, you know, extreme self-care and people who live sort of glamorous or extremely great, take really good care of themselves, what came first? And oftentimes people wait and think, well, you have to be wealthy to do that. But I think what you're all discovering is no matter how much money you have right now or how little money you feel you have, there are simple ways that you can improve your self-care and feel more luxurious about your life with whatever resources you happen to have at the time. So, and a lot of this stuff doesn't have to be expensive at all. So some will be an investment in yourself. And that's something to take a look at as well. So keep up with this habit of looking at how can you stretch yourself in this way. Stretch just a bit bigger, a bit further from what you're currently doing. So if you're getting a massage once a month, maybe you can knock that up to 2 times a month, or get a massage and add in a facial, or, you know, something that would stretch it a bit further than where you currently are. And it's the same with weightlifting. We don't start off lifting the heavy weights. We start with the lower weights, and we gradually just keep stretching, keep building those muscles until they're stronger and stronger. And in a sense, we can do that in the coaching as well, and with this self-care program. Sometimes we can't go for the full Monty right away, but we can just gradually start inching it up, doing one little bit extra, a little bit extra, and especially if the things are free. A lot of the best things in life are free, and so there may be no reason why you can't put those into your life. All right, so good work on that, and keep it up, and keep looking at how you can add on a little bit more self-care, Now, what you'll start to notice is that when you do that, you're going to end up starting to attract better people and opportunities into your life, so watch out, that's coming next. I wanted to talk a little bit about, one of the folks already mentioned it, about investing in yourself and the being a bit selfish. We talked last week, the week before, about being selfish and that willingness to put yourself first in the highest sense. And that we often think of that as a bad thing, that when we really take care of ourselves, it's going to punish or hurt other people in some way. And I'd actually like to dispel that myth and just really put that one to rest. When you really invest in yourself and when you really put yourself first in the highest sense, an amazing thing happens. Other people around you are taken care of as well. It really does work that way, even though your intentions may be very selfish. And this is what is kind of the mystery of things. And I'm thinking of very basic examples. I'm sure you've all had this situation where maybe you were double booked or too busy for a day, and you just thought, oh, I don't really want to cancel this person. I've already bumped them back once. Or maybe you're feeling a bit under the weather, and you think, oh, I really don't want to do this thing. And you call the person up and say, hey, look, you know, is there any way we could change this? And then you find out, oh, actually, that works so much better for me. I'm so glad you called. This will be much better. And it actually takes care of the other person. So although it was all about you picking up the phone and saying, well, this really doesn't work so well for me because things have changed or this is what's going on, is it okay with you if we change the date? And now time and time again, people report that it always works out well for the other person, almost always. And they say, oh, yeah, I've just had this thing come up, so that actually works out better for me, too. So that's one example, a very simple little example. And one of my colleagues was, in fact, sick one day and canceled every single one of his clients on one coaching call day. And he said every single one of them said, oh, that actually works out better for me. You know, so these little bizarre things can happen. But really looking at, are you taking good care of yourself? That what are my... this is very selfish. I was talking about how we can do good deeds in the community. And I got onto this topic because I'm in a book club and we were talking about how we could do good deeds, basically, how we can do charitable works in our community. So there's all these women in my book club, and we're in a town of about 40,000 people here in England. And England's already a very charitable country overall. We have a lot of charity shops, for example, selling used clothing and things like that. And there's tons of them in this town. I was just amazed when I moved to England how much charity there is, and just people do seem to naturally be very, very charitable. Not to say that the Americans aren't as well, but I think a lot of it also has to do with the houses are smaller in England, and so you have to keep offloading your things so people donate regularly to charity just because they don't have the space to keep things. But in any case, it's still a good thing. And we were looking at how we could ourselves start incorporating good deeds into our lives. And I had this talk about being selfish with people and saying, well, actually, in taking care of yourself, you can actually benefit the people in the community. And so I gave them an example. And I said, look, I have, for example, a lot of them don't have a house cleaner. And I said, I have a house cleaner. But instead of hiring a cleaning service or an agency or a big company, I hire a gal who's basically on benefits. And so she's at the poorest, on the poorest scale of things, you know, making a very low income. And I pay her so that she has more money. Now, it's her own little business. Everything I ever said, well, that doesn't count. That's not charitable. And I said, well, it is and it isn't, because when she's taking care of me, but I'm also taking care of her, and I've referred her to numerous of my friends who have now hired her, and she actually now, thanks to me, has a pretty decent little income coming in, not just to me personally, but because I've recommended friends and all that and helped her build up her business and even given her some advice on how to do that and market herself. So, yes, it's totally selfish on my part because I get my house cleaned, but I'm also feel like I'm helping somebody who's on the low end of things income-wise have a better quality of life. Well, she's still on benefits, but now if she has a little bit of extra money, she can afford to go out for a meal in our local community, go out and buy a new shirt, do some of the nicer, you know, more slightly luxurious things that she might not be able to afford to do. So we haven't gotten her completely off of the benefits yet. Cost of living in England is very high, but we have definitely, between me and my friends, helped her have a better quality of life. Now, I consider that being charitable in a sense, that when you look after yourself and get your needs taken care of, you can at the same time be helping people. They didn't quite buy it. We did have a good laugh about it, though. They said, no, it has to be. They have this notion that charity has to incorporate some amount of struggle or sacrifice on your part. And I said, well, I disagree with that. And likewise, I get a weekly massage. Another gal who's on the low end of spectrum here in terms of income, and she comes to the house, and I give her a massage, and I pay her more than you would for somebody you just go to. I could go to the shop. There's a studio in town I could go to. And I actually pay her more because she comes to the house and brings her table and all that. And so I said, well, I'll pay for more of that. Again, another scenario of somebody who's close to the edge, and every little bit helps for these folks. So again, is that just, you know, now my take on charity might be a little bit more different, a little bit different than other people in that I like to help people do something that gives them a sense of dignity and accomplishment as opposed to just handing out money. And I actually think that ultimately is healthier than just saying, oh, here, you don't have very much money, let me just give you some. So that's that. I have a very practical approach to charity. Not everybody is like that. But it also can help you be more charitable in a sense if you start looking for those opportunities and think, for those of you who struggle to be selfish, if you think of it as, boy, yes, I'm being selfish, I'm getting this massage, but actually, I'm helping somebody who could really use the money too. So that makes you feel, if that makes you feel better about it, it helps you justify it. For those of you who are very naturally giving and unselfish, that can be a way of looking at it. I'm not only taking care of myself, but I'm giving them something that's of benefit to them as well and helping them be, establish themselves and have a profession or a career in this community. Well, that's not a bad thing, is it? So we started looking at ways that we could incorporate doing good deeds into our lives on a regular basis. And I came up with another very simple way. I said, well, every day I go for a walk on the beach in the morning, and what I'm going to do now is bring a plastic bag and pick up all the rubbish. So I go along and pick up empty beer cans and bottles and plastic bags and a lot of McDonald's, I'm afraid. So I pick that stuff up, and I'm thinking, all right, the next person who walks by now will have a beautiful, litter-free walk. So maybe I kind of was focusing on getting rid of the litter, but the next person behind me is now going to have a nice, clean path to watch, and I would love that for myself. So again, it's a little bit selfish in that, you know, I'm doing something for myself, going out in the morning having a walk, and tying it in at the same time, so it costs no extra time on my part, I'm picking up litter. So, you know, you can easily start incorporating little good deeds into your life without any extra time or money, or but just by adjusting things slightly. Do you see how that works? So you can start contributing to the community in small ways, doing small little good deeds. And, of course, why were we doing these good deeds? Well, it makes you feel good. So, again, that's really selfish. I read something about Mother Teresa and her own selfishness, in a sense. She was fascinated with the point of death. She wanted to be with people on the verge of dying because she was very interested in that transition from life into death. And so she put herself into communities where there were a lot of people who were about to die, so she could experience that on a fairly regular basis. Now, it looked from everybody's perspective that she was a completely selfless person, but when we look inside, her inner motives were more selfish than people realize. She was in her own self-interest. So we can be selfish and selfless at the same time. You know, and I think she's a pretty good example of that, that her fascination was with that. But even more simply, I was once going out with a guy, and one of my boyfriends in New York, and he didn't get this whole idea of being kind to others because it feels good for you. And I said, it does. And that's, you know, the reason to be kind is not to be kind for others, but because it makes you feel good. And that's the best motivation of all, is because after you do something like that, you feel good and you feel better about yourself. You feel, hey, I've done my little good deed for the day. I've done my good thing. If we're all running around doing little bits of good deeds, and it doesn't, you know, yes, you might, you know, join the soup kitchen and dish out soup and do something a bit more dramatic, but for me, with two small children and, you know, a business to run and, you know, taking out a whole extra bunch of time to do that right now is not on the cards. I need to just incorporate stuff into my life as it is. So I just want to challenge you guys this week as well to start looking at how you can incorporate into your daily routine what you're already doing without taking up extra time or necessarily money, or maybe a bit more money because you're going to be getting that massage from somebody who's on the lower income scale, in helping people in the community some way by giving them work to do, by having them clean your house or wash your windows or wash your car or, you know, I don't know what, but think of something that would benefit you and also benefit the community. And it can be purely selfless as well. If you want to go and join the soup kitchen and donate your time that way, that's great. And remember, we get out of that something too. We get that feeling of having done good, and that feels good. Having helped another person, and that feels good too. All right, so a little challenge there in terms of how can you incorporate and start asking that question. Maybe you don't do anything this week, and just consider it and see what would be an easy and effortless way for me to contribute or to do a good deed. And it can be very small. It doesn't have to be anything big. My big example of that was a project I started called in New York City called Neat Street. And this is a more targeted thing. But again, my motives were entirely selfish, in that I didn't like having a dirty street. I used to live on 33rd Street in New York City, between 3rd and 2nd Avenue, right in Murray Hill neighborhood. And the streets were not that clean. You know, there would be rubbish or litter on the streets. And we also had, of course, homelessness. There's a lot of homeless people in New York City, and still are. So there's two things that really annoyed me, and this goes back to my list of petty annoyances. And when you look at your petty annoyances and put things on it, so the pollution in New York City, the car alarms, the homelessness, the dirty streets, all that was on my list. And those are some pretty big annoyances. It's a little bit bigger than perhaps a missing button or scuffed shoes. So I put them on the list. I didn't really know what to do about them. But my own coach challenged me to do something about it. And he said, well, what are you going to do about your list of annoyances? I said, oh, I don't know. But I got the idea of asking a homeless person if he would clean my street, because I thought, well, that's going to sort out two birds with one stone. If I can get the homeless people a job, so I said, well, I'll just start with my street. So I went up to the ATM machine where this guy was begging, and I said, would you be willing to clean my street? I live on 33rd Street between 2nd and 3rd Avenue, so that's all I'm asking is that one block, just between 2nd and 3rd Avenue. So you don't have to do any more than that. And I said, in exchange for picking up the rubbish on that street, what I will do is go to all the doors and knock on the doors of the people who live there. Now, mind you, these are apartment buildings, so there are quite a few people living on this block. And I will ask them to donate $1 a week to you in exchange for you cleaning the street. So a little bit of an informal job, basically. Now, he said, yeah, okay, I'll do that. And I said, great, see you tomorrow morning outside my apartment building at 7:30 in the morning. Now, do you think he actually would show up? I didn't think he would. But guess what? He was there. He was there at 7:30 in the morning. I was a little bit shocked, so I scrambled around and found a garbage can for him, and a broom, and sent him off on his task. And so there he was, off and starting. And he did exactly what I requested. So I thought, well, I better go knock on doors. So I went and made a flyer, took his picture, and posted flyers on the street and handed them out under people's doors and knocked on doors and told people, this guy here, and here's his picture. If you see him, give him $1 a week, and would you be willing to do this project? And everybody I spoke to said, yes, we'd be happy to give him $1 a week. Except for one person. I knocked at one person's door, and they said, nope, we're not willing to do that. I'm not willing to do that. And I said, why? I'm just curious, why? And the person said, because I think he'll make too much money.
Oh, God.
That was the only objection. Okay, homeless person making too much money, that would be an interesting phenomenon. But nonetheless, everybody in the neighborhood was really keen on it. And what happened was he did make so much money that he was no longer homeless. He actually could afford to have a place to live. So pretty great. And then he was in the local paper and then on the television. And then what happened is other people started doing it and calling me up and saying, how did you do Neat Street? And I
said, hurry.
Yeah. Was there somebody there? You might want to just put your mute button on. So that little project was called Neat Street, and it then ended up being that businesses in New York City could sort of copied the idea, which I was very happy for them to do, and set up cooperatives where they actually hired people, put them in uniforms, gave them proper jobs and salaries and the whole deal, and businesses who lived on that street would all contribute to that person's salary. And have them get a proper job out of it. So became a bit more formal. That became the Grand Central Partnership. There's one also on 86th Street where the businesses did that. So just fantastic. And all that started off because I was selfish. Yes.
Elaine.
Yeah? Can you hear me?
Washington, D.C., they did a clean sweep program, and now there's a number of neighborhoods all over the city that have what they call business investment districts, and they basically work on that principle where they get people, they give them uniforms, the businesses and the community pay them, and they keep the streets clean, and they also act as kind of like ambassadors. Somebody's lost or whatever. They, you know, they tell them which way to go and that type of thing. So it's spread beyond New York.
Isn't that marvelous?
Yeah. They have it. Like DuPont Circle has Golden Triangle. There's one in north of Massachusetts Avenue. There's a number of them. If you Google business investment district, you'll see.
Fantastic. So here's the thing. If somebody had said to me, Talaine, I want you to set up these Golden Triangles and this business investment thing and have everybody in New York, you know, I would be overwhelmed by that project, right? If you told to me that, you know, I need to set up everybody on every street with this guy cleaning, you know, that would be an overwhelmingly huge project, right? Who'd want to do that? It's like, oh my gosh, I'd have to end world hunger. I'd have to clean up all the streets of New York. Oh, for heaven's sakes, you know. So on my list, the dirty streets of New York, I didn't try to tackle all the dirty streets in New York, and I didn't try to solve the entire homeless problem in New York. I picked my street, very selfishly, and I picked one person. And so this is why I'm saying it's, if you actually think, well, what am I able to do? What's the smallest thing I can do to get this thing going? And what's the selfish thing that I can do? Because naturally you're going to be motivated to take care of your own street because that's the one you're going to see. So if you take a look at your selfish motivations, I want a clean street and I don't like homeless people begging at the ATMs. That's selfish. So I'm going to do something about that. And so I picked the tiniest thing I could possibly do to do something about that. No idea if it would work. And what I'm saying is this has a ripple effect. And as you've seen, it's rippled way beyond the original project. You know, it went on TV and the news, and now it's in other cities. It's not just in New York. Brilliant. You know, but I didn't have to do that. All I had to do was my little bitty street, one block. That I could manage. And so what I'd like to do is encourage you all, instead of saying you're going to end world hunger, what's one little thing you can do in your neighborhood to make it better? And maybe it's just like me, you just pick up trash as you're walking along. Fine. The next person along is going to see a cleaner street. Maybe you'll save a whale from sucking down a plastic bag and dying. You know, great. So this is what I'm saying. If we all got a little bit more selfish and said, well, I want clean water for to drink for me and my family, so what am I going to do about that? How am I going to have that happen? I want to do this thing. Pick something that's close to home because you'll be more motivated to do that. And if, you know, if everybody, like I said, if everybody in New York just did their own block, well, the city would be clean. Right? And there'd be a whole lot less homeless people without, you know, a place to live because they could actually have enough money to live somewhere. So it just this whole notion of being selfish and charity, I'd like to just completely debunk that myth and just say, yes, it starts with being selfish. Selfish is good because when you really take care of yourself, you end up caring for the people around you by default. I want a clean place to live and walk, so that's selfish. But then when I do that, it's clean for the next guy. So now, that's just one of them. Does anybody else have anything to comment or add? We welcome for your own ideas on things. So basically, look for the selfish, lazy way to do charity. because you're more likely to do it then. Let's just call a spade, you know. That, you know, there might be some of you out there who are very charitable already, you know, no worries. But for those of us who are feeling too busy for that or too poor for that or whatever, you know, you don't need any money. I was willing to spend $1 a week for a clean street. So even if all you could spare is $1 a week, okay. I spent a few minutes hanging up flyers and running around, knocking on doors for a few minutes. But I only had to get it started, and then it took on a life of its own. And then it immediately caught fire to 32nd Street next door because his friend was homeless, and he said, well, can you get me a street to clean? And I said, well, here, I've got a friend who lives on 32nd Street. I'll set him up in charge of it. So then, you know, we got two blocks going right away. But, you know, really, really, really easy. And it's fun. It's wonderful to see. And it's a ripple effect. You just toss in that little pebble, which I just did, a tiny little pebble, into the cleanliness of New York City, and look what's happened.
I do something similar in my apartment complex. For some reason, particularly on the weekends, people are too lazy to put their trash inside the compactor, and they just sit it out in front. It's really silly. So I go out a couple of times during the weekend, and I put all the trash in before it builds up too much, you know? So I don't know if people see that and are inspired or what, but it makes me feel better, and it makes me feel empowered because I don't feel like I'm a victim of this trash, you know? There's something that I can do, and I just go ahead and I do it. I hate feeling like a victim.
Good. Perfect. Yeah, perfect. That's brilliant. And here they've done studies, and here's an interesting thing. They've done studies where if there's trash lying around or on the floor, people are very likely to add to it. If the place is clean, people tend not to add to it. They'll take their trash home with them. So people are much less likely to litter a place that's clean than they are a place that's already littered. So
broken window syndrome.
Exactly it. And that's exactly what Giuliani did in New York City to reduce the crime by 50%. He started to tackle the small crimes, the graffiti writing on the trains, people riding their bicycles on the sidewalk. So he tackled those small crimes and ended up reducing crime by 50% overall in New York City because it just set a different tone. So, you know, there's huge knock-on effects to taking very small actions. And the same for our own self-care. So going back to looking at what do we need to do, and part of our own self-care is being selfishly aware of what's going on in our towns, our communities, our environment, and picking the thing that most bothers you. And it can be something off your list of petty annoyances. Just like your self-care can be something that ticks off one of your personal and emotional needs. So you meditate for half an hour, and that gives you the need for peace. Brilliant. I have so go ahead and take, that's perfectly fine. So yeah, I was going to say, it's all right to be selfish. That's basically my ultimate message there. I wanted to introduce to some of the other programs that we'll be working on, especially in the Ideal Life program. There's two programs. One's called the Buff It Up program. And this notion of buffing it up is to perfect something. So it's buff is perfection plus personal style. So it's perfect for you in your personal style, not in somebody else's. And that can be very, very different. And looking at all the different areas that you could potentially buff up, like your body. And when I'm thinking of people being buff, I always think of guys with like a six-pack, you know, having a buff body. You know, they're really, really buffed up. Other people think of buffing up their nails. It's like they have really nice nails or something, and that might be the area you work on. But we want to have something in your life that you feel is buffed up, that you feel is as perfect as you can make it, and it's in a reflection of your personal style. I just, for some reason, I'm coming to mind is that there was that runner with the really long nails. I can't even remember her name. And she had really fancy nails before that was all in style. Kind of set the trend for that. And really long nails for a runner. She's an Olympic athlete. Joyce, what was her name? But anyway, she had buff nails, not to mention a buff body. But that was kind of her thing. It was her signature thing. So,
Lawrence Joyner.
Florence Joyner, that's it. Thank you. I got the J in there somewhere. Florence Joyner. And so, you know, that was a looking at, she's a great example of somebody who had not only a buff body, but she had the buff nails, and that was her sort of trademark thing. And you might want to take a look at that and see if there's some part of your body that you would like to buff up. Maybe you want to have that six-pack of abs. Maybe you want to focus on having really great shoulders or really nice toenails, or just your hair might be really buff and it's just perfect. And so some area that you feel like, hey, yeah, I got this. Hoorah! You know, this is really great. And you can do that for your body, for your spirit, for your heart, for your self-care, for your home, for your work, for your quality of life, for your finances, for your friends and family, and then for your own sort of magic. So just there's some ideas in there of things that you might have. So, for example, under self-care, that you have a facial weekly or massage weekly, hair trimmed and styled monthly or every 6 weeks, again, depending on whether you're a guy or a girl, that you treat yourself really well, that you have your clothes and colors done with an image consultant. Maybe you only wear natural fibers, your clothes breathe, that your telephone has a nice ring to it, that you wear well-shined, attractive, and well-heeled shoes, that you drink clean water, that you have your car cleaned professionally every 2 weeks. So, you know, it's just some ideas. I'm not saying that everybody needs to do that, but that might be something to look at under self-care. In terms of quality of life, I don't do errands. I work out daily. I have more than enough time to do what I want. I wear jewelry of the finest quality. Adversity and suffering are foreign concepts to me. Every day feels fresh and new. Nothing's carried over. I'm adrenaline-free. I have 95 on the reserve index. That's another program we'll talk about. I'm proud of the life I lead, and I want for nothing. So just, you know, you could see, wow, that would be pretty great, right? Under finances, I have $100,000 in savings or liquid investments. I earn at least $100 an hour for my time. I have insurance to protect me. My taxes are done professionally. My investments are up to date and well invested. Money is just a detail in my life. I give 10% of what I make in time or cash to those I love. I'm saving at least 20%. Net income increases 10% per year. I have no money blocks and live the idea of abundance. So you can start to see these really stretch. We're at the more advanced section of the program here. And we'll work more on those, again, in the Ideal Life program, really looking at that program, working through these, tailoring. These are just suggestions. You might want to tailor them to yourself. And what I recommend is that people pick one section to focus on and work on. You know, well, I don't want to make any rules at this point, but sometimes we say, okay, I'm just going to really focus on buffing up my spirit or my body or my heart or my self-care. So, and focus on that as an area that you want to buff up so that you can kind of get one section done. Your home, a lot of people working on your home is a great place to start. So just fun, and it's about just taking your life up to that next level so that now we've gone past the point of it being an energy drain, and now these things are giving you energy. So you look at and you know, think of your body actually being a source of energy to you. Your home becoming a source of energy to you. And this really does, you know, it is about perfecting things in your own personal style. You might choose to live in a teepee, or, you know, it doesn't, or in a, and it's the guy who started coaching lived in a mobile home, you know, a coach thing. He drove around the country. So it doesn't have to be that you live in a particular mansion of some sort. It can just be your own thing, but that it's buff for you. It's about your personal style. Any questions about that? And again, these are ones that we will focus on more. These programs will be, they are more advanced, you know, so don't panic. You know, they should be fun and something that stretches you. But this is something maybe you say, okay, well, I'll look at that program and maybe I'll get a couple of points on it and not worry about it and not worry about getting them all at once. Just say, oh, I can get this one and that one. The reserve program This is about having more than enough in our lives. And this is having reserves, not just of money, because we always think about money, but also of time and space. Do you have enough time and space in your life? Do you have reserves of love and attraction in your life? So some of the points on this one, just to give you, get you thinking on it, under love and attraction. No one in my life thinks I should change. So people love you just the way you are. I got 25 cards on my last birthday. My circle of 10 are fully supported and loved. I grant everyone I know and everyone I've met a lifetime of absolute forgiveness. I've received 10 letters of gratefulness from friends and colleagues in the last 90 days. I attract people rather than go after them. I know the 10 things I want for others. I speak straight and always appropriately. I don't hold back even the little stuff. Okay, so those are just a few ideas of things that would help in the love and attraction department. Money and freedom, I always have $100 in my pocket. Under energy and vitality, I get a massage, body work done monthly. My blood work is all in the normal range. I only eat the foods that nourish me. I am never or rarely ill. People remark weekly on how well I look. I wouldn't think of tolerating anything. I'm beyond suffering. I consistently underpromise and overdeliver. Adrenaline never courses through my veins. My 3 top needs are fully satisfied. Clean sweep is 100 out of 100. I take 4 relaxing vacations a year. I print my monthly personal business financials by the 15th of every month. And I end the business day energized. Work and play are the same for me. So just see, if you could see, these are a bit of a stretch, right? For most people, they are. But fun stuff to start playing with. So these are what we're going to be working on more in the advanced programs we go through. We'll start talking a little bit more about those again in next month when we're working on effortless success. I'm going to give you guys some tips next month about what it does, how you can start using some of the almost magic tricks to attract things to you. So we'll talk about some tricks and techniques to attract what you want. In an almost cheating sort of way. But I thought I would share as well, because all of you shared what was the one thing you did to improve your own self-care this past month, and I thought I'd share with you something I did in my own life, because I'm always working on this too. And I hired a guy, his name is Eric Schaffert, and he was my feng shui consultant when I was in New York. He actually came out to my house up in the Catskills when I had that. And he's now moved to England. Isn't that amazing? He's in London. And I asked him if he would do a little feng shui consultation on my new house, because I haven't had that done yet. And I said, yeah, this, I feel I'm not quite settled into this house, and it's been over a year now. I still don't feel settled, so I felt that I needed some feng shui expertise on it beyond what I could get done myself, because I thought I was doing fairly well, but then I just thought, still doesn't feel completely right to me. And so I just faxed him over, actually scanned him over. Nobody faxes anymore, do they? Scanned and emailed over the floor plans for the house, so he'd have those, and took some pictures and sent those over to him. And he did it by Skype. So for those of you who might be interested in having a consultation, he can do it by Skype. And he is no ordinary feng shui guy. He is pretty amazing. So he immediately saw some interesting things that I would never have guessed about the house. And one of the things he said is that there's some authority issues in this house. And it's no clear authority here. Because I drew in where the furniture was, just sketched it in. And so immediately he said, move your dining room table the other direction. So it's instead of going vertically across the room, it's going horizontally. So I did that. And he said, you know, and have your husband sit at the head of the table so that he can be the head of household, really. I thought, oh, okay. He said, right now, he said, you're probably finding that your eldest daughter is starting to rebel. Now, she's only 9 years old, and she is already starting to rebel. And he said, it's only going to get worse. She needs to have a clear head of household, that there is an authority figure in the house. And so we did this immediately. And the funny thing is, I didn't think it would look as nice from a decorating standpoint. But everybody who's walked in said, our house cleaner came in, a neighbor came in, oh, I like what you did with the table. That looks so much better. So everybody really likes it. And it's been interesting. I've had my husband sit there, and I didn't tell him what was going on. But I did say, hey, you know, you're head of the household, alpha male. So it's kind of funny. And it has felt different. It cost no money. It took me 2 seconds to move the table. And this is where, even though from a decorating standpoint, I thought it was better the other way around, from a feng shui standpoint, it's working in an energetic level. So it's providing something quite different. And that lack or missing authority in the household showed right up on this. And I never would have in a million years guessed it. So that's the advantage of having somebody from the outside who is a bit of an expert, can go in and tweak things. So if you're still feeling that there's something not quite right about your house, or maybe there's something in your life that you're stuck with, immediately they can usually see what's wrong. So it may be worth doing. So that's just something to consider, and that's what I did. And, of course, he's given me a whole list of things to do, and some of them are the more traditional things, like we don't have the, when you open your front door, it's nice if it hits a chime so that you can hang a little wind chime so that when somebody comes in, it sends off this delightful little sort of a tinkling noise. It's a lovely little, you know, wind chime noise. It's just a little one. It's not a big, big, loud thing. And that happens anytime anybody opens the front door. So it's just a nice way to kind of greet your visitors or greet yourself as you come in with this lovely little noise. So that's something he's also advised, which we had in our old house, but we didn't bring that with us, so I have to get a new chime. So little things like that, and hanging a crystal in my office. So there's some of that traditional feng shui gears, but as well as doing some of the things you wouldn't necessarily think of doing. So I just want to encourage anybody who does feel a bit like their house isn't quite nurturing them fully as it could be, or if you feel stuck in a particular area, there may well be something you can do from a feng shui standpoint to jazz that up a bit. What he had me do, and this is a really good little trick, that I think I mentioned last week, taking photos of your house, because in taking photos of the house and sending them to him, I realized that some things I thought were really nice, and some things I thought, oh boy, does that room ever need some work? Yeah, there's some work to be done here. And he really challenged me in my office as well. He said, if you haven't used it in 6 weeks, you need to get it out of there and create some space. That's a bigger challenge. I was thinking 6 months. He said 6 weeks. Really streamline, really clear out the space for new things to come in. All right, so that's my little share for what I've been working on in my own life, because I'm always doing this stuff with you guys too. Does anybody have anything they'd like to share? We're still being recorded now, so does anybody have anything they'd like to share, add, or comment on, or any other questions?
Actually, this weekend I went and got a massage, so I was really happy about that, and I actually signed up for there's like a membership with a massage place. So you get like, you know, it includes like one massage already in the price, and then every other massage you get is almost like half price. So that was really neat. And the other thing is that I had a question. I was wondering if you have any tips or, you know, either feng shui related or otherwise, as far as like being able to like quiet your mind and kind of focus or bring about the answers that you're looking for.
Sure. Yep. Got that. Is there anything particular that's distracting you that keeps coming up in your thoughts, or is it just general?
As usual, it's my love life that throws me off completely.
Your love life. do you have a love life, or is it a lack of a love life?
I actually sent you an email not too long ago about it, but you know, it kind of, you know, was with somebody who didn't work out, but you know, I thought it was going to be something, but it wasn't, and I couldn't help myself. I emailed the person yesterday, and now I've been like, oh, do I write back? No, and he wrote back. I thought he wouldn't, and he did. And he's like, oh, I hope you're well, ! And I'm like, oh, okay. Should I email him again and write something back? Should I let it be? Like, I just don't know what to do. I don't know if I should just continue working on myself. And like you said, like instead of me chasing and me emailing, like just attracting, like I already opened up the communication channel, I guess. Just as much as I could email, he could also email me, but he just went and updated his Match.com profile, and I was like, and he included things in there that I told him. So I thought that was interesting. So anyways, I don't know, like, what do you recommend as far as, like, quieting the mind or figuring out, is this something that I should work on or pursue, or should I just let it be and work on myself? What do you recommend?
Well, given that you're a woman, let the men come to you. You know, guys, if they don't call, are not interested, and it's that simple. It really is that simple. So if you've contacted him and he's gotten back to you, great. Let him be the one to initiate anything further, okay? And I wouldn't get your hopes up, because usually things don't work out for a reason. So it's probably more about you getting past this. Let them come to you. You're the woman, especially if you're a woman, let the guys come to you. Be attractive. You can wink. You can smile. But let them initiate. Let the men be men. This goes back to, there's a very old book out there, if you can find it, called Searching for Courtship. And it's by Winifred Cutler. And it's all about how she's a female biologist and looks at the biology of courtship and how in the animal kingdom, and we are animals, the female animals let the men come and court them. They let the males out there of the species court them. And if you don't believe me, spend an afternoon watching pigeons in a park. Just spend a little while watching pigeons, and you'll see. Those females are hard to get. And the men get all puffed up and dance around them and dance around them and dance around them. They're not getting any action. It's amazing they managed to reproduce. I spent a whole day watching pigeons and didn't see any action. it's just really being, letting the men come to you, let them court you, let them do the phone calling. You know, it's not that you're playing hard to get. It's just let them be men. Men need to pursue. They like it. Why deprive them of that? So let him be a man. Let him come after you. So that means, A, get to work on getting your own personal and emotional needs met. If you've just been through a breakup, you're going to be a little bit needy, a little bit broken. You need some mending up time. And it's usually more time than we think. Usually you need 6 months, maybe even a year, maybe more, to get over a broken heart, especially if you thought you were going to marry the guy. So give yourself a bit more time to get yourself back on your feet. And maybe you decide you're not going to date people for now. You're just going to get over this guy and really focus on yourself. Goodness sakes, you've got enough to do working on the coaching program. Work on your clean sweep. Work on getting your emotional needs fulfilled.
Yeah,
and then
career.
You won't need the guy for that. You'll be much more attractive when you've sorted out your clean sweep. Get a good job. You know, be happy in your work. Focus on yourself for a bit, and you'll be in a much better position to attract the right person.
No, because even the temp job that I'm in right now, that I, you know, at the beginning I felt challenged and I liked it because I was learning, but now I've reached kind of like a plateau, and I guess because I'm a temp, they're not giving me like more responsibility, and now I'm finding it kind of boring, and my mind drifts constantly thinking about stuff.
Volunteer.
I'm thinking about.
Volunteer to take on additional responsibilities.
Okay.
If your mind is drifting, you could be going up to somebody and say, "Hey, look, I need another project. I finished this one. I need a project. What can I do to help you?" Seek out a way that you could do something. Because you're not going to get promoted into a full-time job if you're just doing the temp job. You need to go above and beyond the call of duty. You need to show to them that you're committed, that you look for opportunities to do work, you take initiative.
Bosses really watch for that.
Yeah. Somebody who takes initiative is gold, because everybody's waiting around to take orders. If you see something's amiss or something can be improved, and you say, "Hey, I'd like to fix this," and you should do it with permission. Say, "I noticed this isn't working very well. I noticed the supply cupboard is a right mess. Is it all right if I spend an hour cleaning it up?" You know, do something that you see could be done better, or do it, and then, you know, but yeah, say, "Hey, I've got a few spare minutes. I'm going to spend 10 minutes today working on this in my spare 10 minutes, and by the end of the week, you have something to show for it." You know, if that's all you have, but look for ways to take initiative. Look where you can see you could do something better or make a difference. Ask people how you can support them or help them if they can give you a project. Create a project that would improve the business and take it on. That's the only way you're going to get noticed.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so thinking about this guy, you think about your career and getting that on track, and, you know, you'll be much more attractive if you are engaged in your work and love what you do.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Make yourself. One of the things we do with the, you know, make a list of your ideal relationship. You know, what are you looking for in a man? And, you know, on my list, I wanted that he loved his work and was made a good income. I would think that would be on most people's list. But I wanted
right.
a man who really loved and was passionate about his work, and it, he earned a good income. That was definitely on two of the things on my long, extensive list. And I wasn't interested in somebody who was going to be moaning and complaining about their work, who wasn't challenged in their work, who didn't enjoy it, and who wasn't making a good income from it. Now, one of the rules is like attracts like. So you got to look at yourself and say, oh, do I love my work? Am I making a good income?
Exactly. That's kind of where I'm at right now, and I felt kind of like at a different situation than him, because he's actually very successful, and I'm not sure if he loves his job, but he is very successful. So, and I'm kind of like, well, I kind of need to work on that on my end.
Yeah. So, how could you enjoy your work more? Find something of passion. We talked about doing a project that would express one of your values at work. And sometimes we have to volunteer because there's nothing there that's obvious. So we have to take on and volunteer to do a project. But ideally, you want to do a values-based project so that it's going to be something you're passionate about. So I'd recommend, and if your work just has no options for you, then you do a values-based project in your life. Like I did the Neat Street project. That wasn't even a values-based project. That was just a get rid of my petty annoyances project. Okay, so, you know, may not even be around values. It might be something more basic than that at the moment. But working on getting those things sorted out, and particularly, you know, working on your emotional needs right now after a breakup, you're going to be a little bit needier than you would be normally. That's normal. It's natural. We're all that way. We don't usually end up relationship and suddenly feel whole and complete and that our heart's not damaged. So, you need to give yourself a little bit of healing time as well for that. All right? But, yeah, let the men come to you. You're a woman. Be a woman. Let the man be a man. All right. Well, I'm going to stop the record because we're at the top of the hour. Actually, we're over there, so thanks for hanging on. And next week, remember, there will be no call-in hour next week, but we will pick up on November 5th for our new theme that month. So enjoy the last week, and I hope you do something even further for your own self-care. And have a great
Delaine,
week.
Delaine, I have a quick question.
Yeah.
I was on the needs list questionnaire. Somebody said on the Friday call that it used to be where you could just check off and it was automatic, but it's not on there, or at least I could not find it. Could you check on that?
Oh, yeah. Where that is if you go to lifecoach.com.
Uh-huh.
And you'll see this on the front page, there's a box called the Emotional Index Quiz.
Mm-hmm.
And if you take that, it takes about 20 minutes, but it will sort through your needs. It's just going to take you through a
cosmopolitan. Okay, so that's different from the needs list quiz.
Yeah, it is the same end result in that you'll identify your top four needs, but we prefer the quiz because you're less likely to cheat.
Okay,
when
on
you
that
look at
other
list,
one, I printed it off, and it was so complicated, I got kind of bogged down in it. But I thought that
I recommend you take the quiz.
Okay, I've done that one then.
And that'll give you your top four needs. The Needless program that you're talking about, I like that part of it, not that because you look at the list of needs, because that throws people off, because it has some homework assignments about getting your needs met and looking at where in your life your needs are being satisfied, where they're not, and what changes you would need to make.
Mm-hmm.
But you're already on that path, so what you've been doing with your self-care is perfect.
Okay. Thank you very
good
much,
work.
Just a little confused.
Yeah, no, the Needless program was the original program, and I thought it was too hard for people to do, so we created the quiz.
It is horrible, yeah.
It's really hard. And so we just made the quiz, so it's really easy to take the quiz, and then people very quickly are able to pick their correct needs, because with the list, what happened was people were picking the needs they wanted to have instead of the needs they actually have. oh, I don't want that need for control. I like this to be adored. That sounds okay. So people would cherry pick their needs, which is not the point of the program.
Thank you very much.
But yeah, it sounds like if you've done the emotional index quiz, that will give you your top four needs. Work with those four. And you've been doing that, so you're on the right track.
Okay. Thank you. Have a good week.
How often should you take that test, the needless program?
Oh, I wouldn't take it that often. Unless something in your life changes or
okay.
You're feeling a bit emotionally needy or something, you might want to take it and just see. Sometimes, like if we've had a breakup or something like that, somebody was meeting our need to be loved or cherished or appreciated, and that person's gone, then suddenly we feel that vacancy and the need pops up again. So you don't have to take that very often. I would take it if you've taken it before your clean sweep was at 75 points. When you get over 75 points on the clean sweep, it's worth taking again.
Okay.
So if you took it and you were below 75 on the clean sweep, what can happen is you might have mixed up survival needs with emotional needs.
Okay.
So that can happen, and you might find that your scores change a little bit. Maybe not, but they might. So sometimes that happens. But otherwise, you shouldn't need to. Your same four needs will pretty much stick with you, usually.
Okay, thank you.
For most of your life. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to let you guys go. Have a great week, and I'll catch up with you soon. Have a wonderful time.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.